Hey y'all, hey, it is me, Dr. O. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Dr. O After Dark. I am truly excited about tonight's episode because we have the one and only Dr. John Lipman here. Now, if you all are not familiar with John Lipman, you guys will know tonight. He is a world renowned in working and treating on non-invasive, non-surgical procedures for a condition that impacts a lot of women, especially a lot of women of color. So I'm going to go ahead and pass it on over here to you, Dr. Lipman. Tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, and I'm so excited about getting into this topic.
Well, I appreciate it very much. Thanks for having me. My name is Dr. John Lipman. I'm the founder and medical director of the Atlanta Fibroid Center here in Atlanta. I've had the privilege of caring for women with fibroids here in Atlanta for over 30 years. And we see women, as you mentioned, not only from around the South, but throughout the country, and even other countries will come for our experience. We do a procedure that completely replaces the need for surgery for women suffering with fibroids. Fibroids are benign tumors, and they don't need to be operated on. Surgery is an option. But in my opinion, particularly hysterectomy, which is so final, and we can talk about that, hysterectomy for fibroids should be an absolute last resort option. But unfortunately, many women receive it as the first and only option, and they fail to mention this tremendous procedure that we do called UFE, uterine fibroid embolization. Sometimes people call it uterine artery embolization. It's the same procedure. It takes about 30 minutes to perform. It's done as an outpatient. So patients come to the Atlanta Fibroid Center, have this amazing procedure. They recover at our center for several hours and go home, not only with all their parts, with just a Band-Aid. That's it, a Band-Aid covering the spot where we went in. So it's minimally invasive procedure with a recovery of about a few days, 5 days maybe. And it's not like a surgical recovery. The next morning, they're up, moving about, walking around. You know, it's a very simple procedure, it's simple to recover from. It's much safer than surgery.
Okay.
It's much less invasive than surgery. The recovery is much shorter, covered by all insurance. And importantly, and often underappreciated by physicians, even female physicians, you get to keep your uterus, because so many times patients have said, well, I went to my doctor suffering with fibroids, and they said, you know, because I'm not interested in children or not interested in any more children, I don't need my uterus anymore. That's absurd. Absolutely absurd. Your uterus is important to you for numerous reasons besides bearing you children. It's important for you psychologically. There's a lot of women that struggle after hysterectomy psychologically, like a man being castrated. There's a lot of sexual dysfunction after hysterectomy, and people don't want to talk about it because it's embarrassing. There's a lot of bone loss after hysterectomy, urinary leaking after hysterectomy. In fact, if you go to the store where they sell adult diapers and you look and see who is on the package, who you should see, in my opinion, should be an elderly man or an elderly woman. You won't see that. Who you'll see is a young, attractive woman of color like yourself. Why? Because hysterectomy is the second most common surgery done in the United States, which is kind of staggering because half the population doesn't even have a uterus. So it's second most common surgery.
Wow.
And the most common reason why we do this invasive surgery is not for cancer of the uterus, which would be appropriate. It's for these benign tumors. And the average age of hysterectomy in this country is 39. And I've seen way too many women under 30 have already had a hysterectomy. They didn't want it, but they were suffering so badly with the symptoms and they just gave in because that's the only option they were told about. So these are young women now, you know, in their late 20s, 30s, even 40s, leaking urine, having to wear an adult diaper because they've taken this big fibroid-filled uterus out of the pelvis surgically and it's weak in the pelvic floor. Now they have to wear a diaper. In fact, I've got this ridiculous advertisement from Depends in my office. Full page ad. It's this attractive young African-American woman and she's scooching on her skinny jeans over her adult diaper, and they're looking at her from behind, and there's some ridiculously cutesy slogan, they'll never know your secret. What? What in the world does this young attractive woman need a diaper for?
Yeah.
I want to know the answer to that question, and they won't answer that. And they know exactly who their target is, young women of color who've had hysterectomies. So hysterectomy is absolutely unnecessary. You don't need to be amputated. In fact, that's the question. Why are physicians, doctors, essentially amputating young black women for benign disease? Please answer that question for me. Because we have a procedure where you don't need any surgery. You get the symptoms resolved. You go home the same day with a Band-Aid. You avoid all the risks and long recovery of surgery. And you get to keep all your parts.
Well, Dr. Lipman, you have brought up so many questions. You know, I want to get into, for those who don't know what fibroids are, I do want you to define that.
Okay.
Also want to get into talking more about hysterectomies, because I know in addition to fibroids, a lot of us also deal with endometriosis. Mm-hmm. And I was diagnosed with endometriosis in my early, 30s, and a hysterectomy was the only thing that I was offered for a cure, unless I want to be on birth control, which has other negative side effects with birth control. But those are the only two options that were given to me. And, you think of, as you said, well, why is it that, this hysterectomy and things like that is what's as the cure for these diseases that impact predominantly, as you said, young African-American female.
Right.
And that goes into a whole nother, I'm sure if it was impacted other populations, we would have resolutions and more research on reproduction.
Oh, no question.
It is another way of, getting rid of, as I was reading an article the other day talking about how in 2025, how much of the world population will be black. And I feel it's another, with these types of procedures, it is another way to reduce the black and African American populations by getting us to get hysterectomies to where we can't have children and reproduce, or being on birth control so that we can't reproduce. But it is, again, because it is a disease that predominantly impacts people of color, the world doesn't really care. It's just like with sickle cell anemia.
Well, there are a couple of things to that. First off, we have a very troubled history with hysterectomy. We're in the South, and there have been just a long track record of performing unnecessary surgeries on women of color, particularly hysterectomies, the so-called Mississippi appendectomies, Fannie Lou Hamer, operating on young black women unnecessarily and removing their uterus. And some of that, unfortunately, still exists today. And it's really unfortunate. And you mentioned research, and that's really part of the key to this, is that despite the fact that fibroids affect a lot of women, particularly women of color, there's been almost no research done, we don't know where fibroids come from. Mm-hmm. We know that once they arrive on the scene, they grow with estrogen. That's why they can grow rapidly during pregnancy and why they tend not to be an issue for most women once they reach menopause. So estrogen is definitely key in the growth of fibroids. Now, you know, when somebody is suffering with fibroids, one of the first things that the gynecologist does, particularly if the patient is having heavy bleeding, heavy menstrual bleeding, which is the number one reason why women have heavy periods, is fibroids. Mm-hmm. So they go to their gynecologist with heavy bleeding, they get placed on birth control.
Yeah.
And so while it may lighten the flow for a while, in the background, it's like pouring gas on these fibroids. And so they grow much more rapidly than they otherwise would. And now they go, well, the medical therapy has failed now, it's no longer working, now let's go to surgery. Or you can suffer with it until you're ready for surgery. That's another thing, that there are over 1 million women right now on the sidelines. They don't want surgery, and I don't blame them, but they just suffer with this unnecessarily because nobody has told them about UFE. So let's look at research just for a moment, because nobody knows where fibroids come from, and that's a big problem. Fibroids generate, if you will, or there's about $18 million a year that is put towards fibroid research, which sounds like a lot, but in the terms of the research world, it's nothing.
Yeah.
Because there are probably at least 30 million women that suffer with fibroids. And so if you break it out, it's about 60 cents per person affected for research. Now, you take another condition, cystic fibrosis, for instance, which is much less common than fibroids and affects primarily Caucasians. Probably 30,000 women or 30,000 people affected with cystic fibrosis, say primarily Caucasians. That generates $94 million a year in research, which is over $3,000 per person. So you got a condition that affects primarily Caucasians getting over $3,000 per individual research affected, versus a condition that affects primarily African American women getting about 60 cents per person affected. So you don't have to look far to find that disparity, and we really need to address it. We need to fix it. Fibroids cause a lot of disability for people, and it affects everyone. It affects, you know, I employ a number of African American women in my practice, and if they suffered with fibroids and they could be out of work, you know, weeks, and you know, if you undergo surgery, people are out of work for 2 months.
Yeah.
Versus if you undergo UFE, you're back to work within a matter of five days, maybe sooner if you work from home, but 5 or 6 days versus 2 months or more from surgery. So from an employer standpoint, you know, it's a huge difference. From the individual patient, it's a huge difference. They get their life back. It's transformational from what they were suffering with. And, you know, it brings up another point about the mental aspect of UFE. UFE, you know, when women are suffering with fibroids, they're bleeding horribly typically, and they're putting out way more blood than they can replace. So they lose not only blood, but in the blood they lose iron and hemoglobin. And hemoglobin carries the oxygen around in our bloodstream. And so women that struggle with fibroids often are very tired, they're weak, they're having these horrible, often crime scene-like periods with big, scary clots. It's painful, and so they may be in a workplace that they're the only woman, and it's other men, and men don't know the first thing about periods, nor do they care, typically. And so you have this woman who's struggling, and she's trying to keep up and do what she needs to do and try to hold her end up in a crowd of people that really don't understand what she's going through. And so not only is there the mental burden of that, and this monthly, here we go again, month after month of the same horrible period, you know, and if she misses work, you know, the other people at work start to wonder about her ability to do her job. So she has to hold up, not only for women, if she happens to be the only woman in the workplace or one of few, she might be the only woman of color. Mm-hmm. So she's got to hold, because if she lets the team down, they're not going to hire another woman or another woman of color. So she bears that burden on top of all the physical and other stuff that she's going through. It's mind-blowing.
So can you tell us, for those who don't know, what is fibroids?
Okay. Fibroids are the most common pelvic tumor seen in women. They're benign. They're not cancerous. They're made up of smooth muscle and fibrous tissue, so they're hard and firm to the touch. They're like rocks. And that's how they cause their symptoms. Based on where they're located in the uterus, they'll press on things. Like, ones located near the lining of the uterus cause heavy periods. Ones that are in the front of the uterus sit right on top of the bladder, causing urinary frequency and waking up at night to urinate. Those on the lateral aspect will press on pelvic nerves to cause pain. Ones that are located in the back of the uterus will press on the colon, cause constipation, often lead people in another direction. They're chronically constipated and they see a GI doctor instead of getting their fibroids fixed. Ones located near the cervix cause painful intercourse. So there's all sorts of symptoms that can be associated with fibroids, because they, depending on where they're located, our patients will commonly have all of that. Heavy bleeding, pelvic pain, urinary frequency, sciatica, you know, stuff that is associated with throwing out your back. You can get the same pain from a fibroid and throw off the doctor. The doctor's like, oh, you got sciatica. Let's send you to a back doctor. You know, and no, the problem is fibroids. She needs her fibroids fixed.
So how, as you said, with so much comorbidity, how does a patient know that it is fibroids and not sciatica, or not, you know, some pelvic pain from, you know, a dropped uterus or something else like that?
Well, she has to see someone that is an expert in treating fibroids. I'm an interventional radiologist. Obviously, that my area of expertise is fibroids. There are obviously gynecologists. That's the most common type of physician that will see a woman's condition. So women will, with these issues, will commonly see either a gynecologist or a primary care doctor. And they will do an examination. You can feel these tumors. They're, as I say, they're hard and firm like rocks. The patient will often feel them if they're in the front of, it can make them look pregnant. There are a lot of women that their fibroids get so big that it bulges them out like a pregnancy.
Okay.
And there's nothing worse than asking somebody about their pregnancy that is not pregnant. It's bad for both parties.
Yes.
It's hard to walk that back. So they will often have that little poochiness initially, but if they don't get them treated, we've had patients look like they're going to deliver twins.
Yeah. Now, I met you probably a couple of years ago at the Gathering Spot, which is a membership club that I'm a part of. Mm-hmm. And I believe you were having like your annual fundraiser or annual conference.
Well, we have conferences and meetings throughout the year. And the particular one that you're talking about at the Gathering Spot was with Portia Williams from Real Housewives of Atlanta. And she was a patient of mine, and I can mention that because she went public with her story. Mm-hmm. And she's, you know, she's an incredible woman and very brave to like tell her story, because, you know, when you're in the public eye and particularly, you know, a very attractive woman and, you know, concerned about your image publicly and so forth, and you're having these horrific periods and going through stuff, you know, some women don't want to share any of that, and some are more open to sharing. I'm glad that she shared her story, because she alerted so many women about UFE that otherwise never would have known about it. And so
Absolutely. It's
important for women. Women are entitled to know all the options. They go to their doctor expecting that, but unfortunately, with respect to fibroids, they're not getting that. We've shown in numerous studies that most women who go to their gynecologist never hear about UFE. And that's wrong. They're entitled to know all the options. So they get presented one option, surgery.
Yes.
Or deal with it, you know, suffer with it. So they need to know all the options and then make the best decision for them. Almost anyone that has been told they need surgery for fibroids, almost every one of them is a candidate for UFE, because I'll hear patients say, well, you know, I brought up UFE with my doctor and she said I wouldn't be a candidate. I'm like, really? Why? Oh, well, she said I had too many fibroids. Well, that's ridiculous.
Okay.
Never too big, never too many. You know, so there are a lot of urban myths, and I write on our website blog pieces about the stuff that I've heard over the years. My fibroids are too big, I have too many, I'll end up needing a hysterectomy anyway, I can't have children after UFE. All of those are myths. We've had numerous children after UFE. I've had multiple twin births, and our births are typically full term and vaginal. Whereas if you have fibroid surgery called a myomectomy, where they take out some of the fibroid surgically, all those patients, if they get pregnant, have to get more surgery, a C-section. So C-section is the number one surgery done in the United States. Hysterectomy is number two. And so we want to end all this unnecessary surgery that's happening to women, but particularly, bless you, but particularly women of color, because it is, I say, hysterectomy for fibroids is completely and totally unnecessary, no matter what your doctor tells you. Get that second opinion from an interventional radiologist like myself, because you can get the relief you're looking for without any surgery and keep all your parts and even have children. And UFE is covered by all insurances. That's not an issue. Say, I've been doing UFE here in Atlanta over 25 years. This isn't anything new or experimental. This is well proven, safe and effective.
And it's because it's covered by insurance, so it's not like an elective surgery, like listening to you and hearing what you're talking about in regards to UFE, it reminds me a lot of what's going on more so now, like with the smart lipo. And I'm more familiar with that because, you know, I got a little extra here or there. And I'm like, okay, if it can be non-invasive and they go in and just kind of, you know, swoop-de-doop.
Yeah, now those sorts of things, as you refer to, those are cosmetic procedures that people have to pay out of pocket.
Exactly.
This insurance won't cover,
they won't cover
cosmetic procedures. This UFE is a medically necessary procedure. These patients are suffering. This isn't something cosmetic. It does shrink the fibroids as well as shrink the uterus and gets rid of that poochy belly and pregnant belly, but that's not why we do it. We do it to relieve suffering and transform patients' lives from being horrifically impacted to normal. So these are medically necessary things and it's covered by insurance. This is not in the realm of cosmetic stuff.
Yes. Now, is there, as I mentioned earlier, I'm more familiar with, from my own self and my own personal story, with endometriosis. Mm-hmm. Is there a procedure? Because I know I've been told that the only cure for endometriosis, as I said, it's either getting on birth control for the rest of my life or having a hysterectomy.
Right.
And as you mentioned, there is not only the physical aspects, but the emotional aspects of it. What if, you know, I do want to have children, but so then I have to either deal with this pain or be on birth control to prevent me from having children.
Right.
Birth control often adds to weight gain.
Yes.
Especially as we're getting older and it's harder, our metabolization and things like that have slowed down and it's harder. And everything for us to lose weight, we definitely don't want to be on a medication that adds weight.
Sure.
Is there anything like UFE for endometriosis, if you're aware of that? Do you know?
Well, the simple answer is kind of. Endometriosis is when the lining cells of the uterus, which is responsible for the menstrual each month and the bleeding and so forth. Those lining cells are called the endometrium. And when the lining cells that make up the endometrium, when they're found anywhere outside of the uterus, that's endometriosis. And they behave like they would if they were on the lining in the correct location. They bleed and they cause a lot of pain, and there's scarring as the body tries to wall these areas off. There's lots of scar tissue that's formed. It's painful. It can involve the ovaries, the tubes. It can be anywhere. I mean, anywhere in the body outside the uterus. Occasionally we'll find patients that have endometrial implants under the skin, in the lungs, I mean, anywhere. But typically they're around the tubes and ovaries and the pelvis somewhere. For those patients, unfortunately, we don't have anything to offer.
Okay.
Now, there is a similar condition in the same family. Mm-hmm. If the lining cells that make up the lining, the endometrium, the endometrial cells, if they just infiltrate into the muscle, most of the uterus is muscular. So you have if you looked at the uterus and you cut it open to look at it, there's a cavity. That's where the baby is and when they're pregnant and so forth. Mm-hmm. So there's basically a very thin lining, the endometrium, and then 95% of the uterus is muscular. That's the myometrium, that's the meat of the uterus.
Okay.
So most of the uterus is muscular. And then there's a thin outer covering, the serosa. So when the lining cells just infiltrate into the muscle of the uterus, it's the same process as endometriosis, right? It's just, it happens to be in the uterus, because by definition, endometriosis is cells that make up the lining outside the uterus. So this is still inside the uterus.
Got it, okay.
So you can't technically call that endometriosis.
Okay, because it's inside.
Right, okay. So they gave it its own name. It's called adenomyosis. And we see patients that have been told they had fibroids for years, because this adenomyosis causes thickening and enlarging of the uterus.
Okay.
And sometimes it's usually diffuse and diffusely enlarges the uterus, but sometimes there are focal, less common forms of adenomyosis that look like a fibroid. And so these women, because they're a woman of color of the right age, having the right symptoms, and they go to their gynecologist, they get an ultrasound, and they're almost expecting fibroids. This lady's got fibroids.
Yeah.
She's a woman of color. She's in her late 30s, early 40s. She's bleeding horribly. I feel that she has an enlarged uterus on exam. This lady's got fibroids, and they're already plugged in. It's already this bias. So they do the ultrasound, and it's kind of like you get the same kind of murky ultrasound reports. Enlarged uterus, heterogeneous and echo texture, and then the bottom line impression, fibroids, even though there's no fibroids in there.
Yeah.
So when they come to me and I do an MRI, which is way better than ultrasound. Ultrasound is a very low resolution, but all the gynecologists have it in their office, so they do it and bill for it. But we get an MRI, which is like high definition television. You can see adenomyosis very clearly separate from fibroids.
Okay.
So sometimes I have to tell patients, even though they've had the diagnosis for fibroids for years, they don't have fibroids. And I go through this, I show them, here's what fibroids look like, here's what adenomyosis looks like, here's what you look like. Oh wow, doc, you're right, I have adenomyosis. Or sometimes they have both, fibroids and adenomyosis, because both conditions are common, particularly fibroids. So that's why it's so important to get the right information and to see the right individuals to get the right diagnosis, because we can treat adenomyosis. We do it all the time.
Okay.
Because it's involving the uterus. Endometriosis, because it's outside the uterus, I don't have anything that I can offer them.
Yes.
But sometimes they have endometriosis of the uterus that I certainly can treat, adenomyosis.
Wow.
The access is typically at the top of the right leg, at the crease.
Okay.
So if you're at the top of your right leg at the crease and you push down, you can feel your own pulse. And so that's our access into the body.
Okay.
I can steer a little tiny catheter the size of a piece of spaghetti, and I can steer it into each of the uterine arteries one at a time. And each of the uterine arteries are like big trees. I'm in the trunk of the tree with the catheter, and the tree starts branching, getting smaller and smaller and smaller branches to get out to the leaves. The fibroids are the leaves of the tree. And I know what size those small peripheral branches are, and I can plug them up. Without a blood supply, those fibroids start to die. As they die, they soften and shrink. And as the softening and shrinking of all those fibroids occur, the woman's symptoms go away.
Wow.
The big trunk and the main branches of the uterus stay open. Bless you.
Excuse me. Thank you.
So the uterus stays alive. Uh-huh. And we've had numerous children after UFE, multiple twin births. But all the fibroids die. And so the dying is not a big deal because that's what happens in menopause. Bless you. Fibroids,
thank you.
Fibroids die in menopause and they do the same process occurs. So we're just not going to wait for menopause for this to occur. We can knock these fibroids out ahead of time. And so the woman gets the relief of symptoms without any surgery. This 30-minute procedure, when I'm done, I can get both uterine arteries from a one-sided approach.
Oh, wow.
So we get both of them, and then we pull the catheter out and put a Band-Aid on there. They recover for a few hours at our center and go home and recover at home for about 5 days. So it's a much safer, much easier, quicker procedure that allows women to get the relief of symptoms they're looking for without any surgery and get to keep their parts and even have kids.
Yes. And you mentioned, you keep mentioning a couple of times having children.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you mentioned that the event that we met at, it had Portia Williams Aminari, I believe is how you say her new last name.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that she had her daughter, Pilar.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not mistaken, and I believe one of the reasons that she was able to have Pilar from what she had shared was due to this procedure. Like before, she had trouble getting pregnant.
Right.
But after, due to this procedure.
It's not an uncommon story. In fact, one of the patients that I'll never forget was a woman in her late 30s when I saw her originally. This was quite a while ago. And she came to me suffering with fibroids, and we started talking about her symptoms, and she just started crying. And I said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. Why are you crying? And she said, well, you know, when I went to my gynecologist and, you know, I said that I, you know, wanted to have children because, mm-hmm. and I didn't want a hysterectomy. He insisted that I have a hysterectomy, and he insisted on scheduling me right there in the office. And
wow.
I said, I don't want hysterectomy. And he said, well, why don't you want hysterectomy? And she said, well, I might want to have children one day because I've not been able to have children. And he looked at her and he said, you know, you're in your late 30s, you're single, that ship has sailed. And so I now have to, I was apologizing for this horribly crass, rude comment by this doctor. And I said, look, I don't know if you're going to get pregnant or not. But what I am confident of is I'm confident I can help you. And so we did the UFE procedure. She was transformed like the vast majority of people are. She got her life back, her symptoms resolved completely. And not long after her UFE, she met a man in church. They started dating and they got married.
Wow.
And lo and behold, they had a child. Baby Jalen, and she sent me this really beautiful handwritten letter with Jalen's baby picture, and it was very touching. And so I put baby Jalen's picture up. We have a huge baby wall in our office.
Wow.
With all these babies that have been born after UFE that a lot of times, like her, we're told you'll never have a child. So I put baby Jalen's picture up on my bulletin board, and this was quite a while ago. About a year or so ago, you know, this was 2004 when I treated her. This was about a year ago. There's, you know, knock at the door. I'd finished seeing patients for the day. It's like about 5:30 or so. And one of my office staff says, there's somebody here to see you. And I'm like, okay, who is it? I thought we were done with patients. She's like, yeah, we are. I don't know who it is. So I walk out and it's this woman and she says, you know, I'm sure you don't remember me, but I was the one that had miracle baby Jalen. I'm like, oh, great. You know, and we hugged and we talked about and it was great seeing her again. And I said, you know, well, you know, it's great seeing you, but why are you here? She says, well, I got to show you something. I'm like, okay. She goes, come on outside. So we walked outside of my office and out of the car where she came from the driver's side popped Jalen. Jalen came out of the, he drove.
Driver's side.
Right, and he came and he was coming to bring me his high school graduation picture.
Oh my goodness.
So he gave me his high school. I go, come out of the office. I got to show you something. And so I pointed to his baby picture and I said, you know who this guy is? And so I put his, if you come into my office, you see baby Jalen and you see high school Jalen next to each other.
And so, oh my goodness.
So it's incredible. I mean, it's the fuel that keeps me coming to work every day because so many women are told they have to have hysterectomy and end that chapter, and they don't. Mm-hmm. Hysterectomy does not have to be done for anyone for fibroids. It's an option if you so choose it, but it should be the option of last resort because UFE is so good and it works in almost everybody. And it typically is a one and done for, particularly if you're in your 40s when you have the UFE, because, you know, while women will ask, could I grow new fibroids? Well, the closer you are to menopause, like if you're in your 40s, particularly mid 40s when you have UFE, it's one and done. But even for women in their 30s, it's often been one and done. So even in those unusual circumstances where a patient does grow new fibroids, if I've seen her in her 30s and now she's in her late 40s, early 50s and still, you know, menstruating, mm-hmm. and she develops new fibroids, I would still say two of these UFEs in those unusual circumstances is still way, way, way better than one hysterectomy.
But I mean, it opens up so many doors for a lot of people because it's non-invasive and it's covered by insurance.
Correct.
So even if I have to go and get three or four UFEs, but no, I'm just saying, like, I know a lot of people who may get them if they know that they're available now at younger ages.
Sure.
You know, like in their 20s. So if they have to get one in, they decide to get one in their 20s, they can still and need to go back and get another one in their 30s or 40s because it's not cosmetic, because it's non-invasive, because it's covered by insurance.
That situation comes up, unfortunately, very commonly with fibroid surgery for women that are interested in fertility. As I mentioned, that procedure is called a myomectomy. Because obviously women that have either a definite or possible interest in fertility can't undergo hysterectomy.
Yes.
Even though any patient that undergoes myomectomy has to sign a piece of paper saying, we're going in for myomectomy, but you could wake up with a hysterectomy. Mm-hmm. And they sign that release, that medical release. And so I see commonly women that have had two and three myomectomies and then they're coming to see me. We've had a woman that had six myomectomies and they're coming to see me. You can do one myomectomy, that's okay. One myomectomy is okay, mm-hmm. but anybody that recurs after that, and that's the problem with myomectomy, they almost never get all of them out.
Yeah.
In fact, rarely they get the majority of them out, because usually women have a lot more fibroids, and the more they try to take out, the more likely she ends up with hysterectomy. Because you've got to, you know, these fibroids are very vascular, they bleed a lot, and they've got to reconstruct the uterus every time they take a fibroid out. They've got to, you know, fix that divot, if you will, take the ball out of the uterus and then reconstruct and sew the uterus back together to have a functioning uterus. And the more they try to take out, the more likely they end up with hysterectomy. So almost always women are left, even though they don't really tell them this, almost always they're left with living fibroids when they wake up from surgery.
Wow.
So they go in for this myomectomy and they try to take the biggest ones they can get out, but they leave behind all these others and they immediately start growing.
Okay.
So the recurrence rate with myomectomy is 11% per year. So most women recur, you know, 5 years is over 55%. So most women recur within like 3 to 5 years.
Wow.
And so now they go back to their gynecologist. They had a myomectomy, say 4 or 5 years ago, and now all the symptoms return. They go to their gynecologist, and the gynecologist goes, oh, those darn fibroids, they're back. Well, it's kind of a lie. They're not back.
Yeah.
It's the ones you, the surgeon, didn't remove the first time. And now they say, are you still interested in kids? Because if you are, get another myomectomy. Or if you're not, let's just get that uterus out. You don't need that anymore. You can do a hysterectomy. And again, they never mention UFE. In my opinion, anyone that's ever had one myomectomy and recurs all of those people should get UFE. You should never do a second, because every time you cut on that uterus surgically, your fertility drops like a stone. A young 20-something year old woman with an average fibroid burden, she has a myomectomy, she's got about a 50 to 60% chance of having a child. She has a second myomectomy, it's less than 10%.
Wow.
So there's no reason ever, in my opinion, to do a second myomectomy. You can do one, but if that doesn't fix it, definitely do UFE.
So speaking of Portia Williams, mm-hmm. as well as hysterectomy, I know there are a lot of other celebrities that you have worked with And I know most recently, and I'm not sure if you worked with her or not, but I know most recently on the Real House franchise, Cherie Whitfield mm-hmm. mentioned her journey with fibroids mm-hmm. and, you know, how she's been offered same thing with hysterectomy.
Right.
And then most recently, I've been reading Viola Davis's book, mm-hmm. and she talks about her struggles as well with fibroids. And I don't know if you read that story or are familiar with her mm-hmm. story, but she suffered so bad to where she couldn't have children. Right. That's why she ended up adopting. But I believe the last time she tells a story about how she hemorrhaged and she was on stage and had a trail of blood coming from her on stage. And so when she had went into the hospital at that point, she had told them, "You better take my uterus."
Yeah, you know. She should have contacted me, because that was the straw that broke the camel's back for Cynthia Bailey. And again, I can mention this because she went public with her story.
Yes.
Uh-huh. She was at a Bravo event in this beautiful white gown and just started gushing out blood, hemorrhaging, and blood is just coming out of her. And at the time, she was married to Peter, and Peter kind of helped her get to an elevator. And in the midst of all that, there were people recognizing her, coming up and trying to get selfies while they're standing in a pool of her own blood. I mean, it was just absurd. But that was the point where she said, you know, I got to do something about this.
Yeah.
And so she reached out to me, and, you know, her whole process, she was, again, very brave about this, put that out on, you know, on her show. I mean, mm-hmm. the consult that we had in our office, the procedure, the aftercare and follow-up, it was all filmed for Real Housewives of Atlanta, and it brought... really, at that time, this was a number of years ago, brought much needed attention, which unfortunately we still need. Because things, even though I've been doing this procedure over 25 years, mm-hmm. For the most part, most women still don't know about it, and it's tragic. And the gynecologists, unfortunately, have done a very good job of keeping this procedure on the down low, and it's they're abdicating their responsibility to patients, because, as I mentioned, everyone is entitled to know all the options, the pros and the cons, the risks and benefits of all the options, and then let the woman decide. Mm-hmm. How can she make an informed decision if she's only presented one option? It can't be. It's like voting in China. One person's on the ballot, guess who wins? You can't make an informed choice that way.
Yes. And there's so much that I would love to continue talking with you about. I know that we're going to get here soon to wrap up, but there's so much that you mentioned that we can segue into you, as you mentioned, just about how this is not many gynecologists are doing this. So it brings up to me Big Pharma. Why are they not mentioning it? Is it because of medication reimbursement that they get back from pharmacies? Is it because of reimbursement back from insurance companies from doing large surgeries like hysterectomies? We can get into the mortality rate mm-hmm. of in pregnancy and in labor and delivery with with women, especially African-American women, women of color, and then also most recently the laws in regards to birth control and things like that, abortion, and so on and so forth, that, you know, has transpired. And then I'm sure you have, from the vast amount of celebrities that you worked with, I'm sure you may have some pretty good stories as well, and been doing this for over 25 years.
Right.
Interested in also just like your family. I know you have a wonderful wife who's also very much involved here in the Atlanta area with a lot of philanthropy.
Yes.
And different things of that nature. So I would love to have you back again.
Sure.
You know, further bring more awareness to fibroids. When is your next event that you're having?
Well, we're doing a number of events, not so much around fibroids, but just the community. We just did a turkey giveaway for Thanksgiving.
Nice.
We always do that every year. We do it through Hosea Helps Feed the Hungry. Uh-huh. We also work with Georgia Spartans,
okay,
where they do a drive-through turkey giveaway. We're going to be working again with the Spartans for a toy drive for kids. We're working with another organization for foster children that are kind of aging out of foster care, so for a Christmas thing for them. And then we have a number of events coming in the spring. That we're working with. I'm going to be presenting to the AKAs.
Nice.
And
okay.
So obviously we spend a lot of time in the African-American community, particularly women's groups. So sororities like AKA, Deltas, Zetas, we do a lot of work with them.
Both. Dr. Lipman knowing all the black sororities.
you know, to say, I've spoken at numerous HBCUs. We do a lot of philanthropy with Morehouse School of Medicine. I love Valerie Rice. Dr. Rice has done a phenomenal job there. So we support a lot of their efforts, and we see a lot of their trainees come through our center, the Atlanta Fibroid Center, whether they're residents or fellows or even attendings. I've spoken not only Morehouse, Ms. Spellman, Clark Atlanta, Tuskegee. Imagine a white male physician speaking to several hundred black women at Tuskegee. And my premise was, they are going through the Tuskegee experiment of their lifetime. Because instead of young, you know, or poor,
yes,
male African-American sharecroppers who volunteered, who had syphilis, volunteering for this study to follow syphilis.
Who didn't even have syphilis, who was injected,
right,
with syphilis, yes.
And then they followed these men, and the reason they volunteered is because they got free lunch and free healthcare. And then when there actually was a cure for syphilis, you know, during the Second World War, they never mentioned it
to
them.
They didn't get it.
So my premise to these women was, you know, this is not just poor African-American women. These are women of all different economic strata, but they're not being told about UFE. UFE is the penicillin for their syphilis, if you will, because they're suffering with fibroids, and sometimes they, you know, a lot of times they don't want surgery, so they just suffer with it. So they're watching these women suffer without telling them about UFE.
Absolutely.
So this is the Tuskegee experiment of their lifetime. Imagine that. I mean, it was like real. It was very real. They appreciated it. They really, I mean, it was a tremendous event. In fact, unfortunately, several women came up to me afterwards crying because they were in their 20s, because these are, a lot of them women were young.
Yeah.
They had already had a hysterectomy in their 20s.
Oh,
none of them wanted it, but they just waved the white flag. They were just suffering so badly, they gave in. And here, as I'm telling them, they didn't need any of that. They could have gone home the same day with a Band-Aid with UFE and even had children after. Because,
wow,
I have daughters that age. It's tragic. And it's got to stop. So that's why people that know me, I'll speak to anybody that'll listen. I appreciate your time and talking to your audience. But I talk to people every single day and sometimes multiple times a day about this. Whether it's, you know, you name it, I've been there. I've talked to every possible. We just came back from Nashville. I did a podcast with Destiny Payton from, she was on, I'm gonna get this right, Real Housewives of Huntsville in Alabama or something, you know, whatever that.
Yeah, I don't think it's Housewives.
It's like that. It's a reality show out of Huntsville.
Yeah.
And she had me on her podcast and we were up in Nashville at the Amazon studio up there. And, you know, say, we're just trying to touch as many different groups and podcasts and, you know, get that information out, because if you have the information is power. And
absolutely,
if you have that information, then you can make an informed decision. If you have all the information and you choose hysterectomy, that's fine. God bless you. It's your body, your choice. Totally fine. But I know that the vast majority of women do not want surgery. They just don't know that UFE exists. And so we're just out there trying to get this word out in any way possible, whether it's through our Facebook page, whether it's through Instagram, whether it's through, we have a YouTube channel, Atlanta Fibroid Center, with hundreds of videos. People will find us there. They can actually watch me do an entire UFE procedure on YouTube. It takes about 30 minutes.
And it's your YouTube channel again?
It's Atlanta Fibroid Center on YouTube. Okay. You can scroll through and find the video. It takes 30 minutes. That's how long the procedure takes. And I talk all the way through it. So, you know, we could even do it even a little quicker if I wasn't talking each step of the way. But as I say, it's a very quick procedure. It's simple because it's not surgery. It's not gory. It's not difficult to watch or anything like that. It's very simple. And then you can see exactly what we're doing. As I say, we go into each uterine artery one at a time, knock out the blood supply to the fibroids on one side, then do the other side, pull the catheter out, put a Band-Aid on.
Wow.
Home the same day.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Lipman. Again, I want you to share with everyone how we can all find you, especially for those who want to find out more information or are suffering with fibroids, interested, and even how did some of now, like the celebrities and things like that, how did Cynthia Bailey and all the,
I don't reach out to celebrities. They find me. They know, I mean, pretty much people know, particularly in these parts, if you will.
But I mean, are there a lot of doctors who do what you do, or is it because it's kind of rare that, as you said, most doctors are offering hysterectomies?
Right.
It's a very limited amount who do.
The type of doctor that does fibroid embolization is an interventional radiologist like myself. There are interventional radiologists in Atlanta at the bigger hospitals that can do UFE, but it's not what they do. Mm-hmm. This is what I do each and every day. I've dedicated my entire life to this kind of niche, this very small area. And so I've done more UFE than anyone, supposedly, not only nationwide, but worldwide.
Wow.
So having the largest experience in this particular procedure, people will travel
to find
distances to come. Right. And just like anything else, you know, when I had my appendix out not long ago and I sought out the best laparoscopic surgeon that did appendectomies. I mean, I wanted to be with that person. And so people will find me that way. I mean, I don't reach out to celebrities. I don't.
Yeah,
I don't hang with celebrities. I have a pretty
balling Dr. Lipman.
Right. So, you know, they find me, and it's pretty easy to find us. I mean, our website is atlii.com. It stands for Atlanta Interventional Institute, which is the parent company of Atlanta Fibroid Center.
Okay.
So atlii.com is our website. Our Instagram page is dr_my_last_name. So it's dr_LIPMAN. And then our YouTube channel, like I mentioned, is just Atlanta Fibroid Center on YouTube. You can subscribe. It's free. And you can see hundreds of videos on fibroids, on the UFE procedure. All sorts of information that people can get from that. So website, IG, YouTube. We do have a Facebook page. We're even on TikTok. It's that's more recent, so it's pretty small on TikTok.
Oh, I can't wait to see you on TikTok doing a little TikTok skit.
Oh, yeah.
With your tools or something like that. Now, last question before
do the wobble.
We go. you can do the wobble? Wobble, baby, wobble. Yeah. The question is, can you do the electric slide?
Oh, that's really old. I'm younger than
your
that.
Your new school? New school?
That's for the older folks. Well, the grown and sexy.
Well, that's my generation, right? Then you already called me cute earlier, so now you're calling me grown and sexy. Uh-oh, we better watch out now. Last question I did want to know. As you mentioned, you're white male, white heterosexual male. How did you get involved in this particular area of practice that, impacts predominantly African American women?
Kind of it's a relatively long story, but I don't believe anything happens by accident. I think everything happens for a reason. It's how I met my wife of 35 years. It's how I got involved in fibroids. I mean, it was part of God's plan. I mean, at the time, I had been treating tumors, cancerous tumors at Piedmont Hospital. That was my original practice out of training back in the early 90s. And I was treating cancerous tumors, and I got invited to this big radiology meeting in Chicago, which I never go to because it's primarily diagnostic radiologists and I'm an interventional. It's kind of a subset. And so it's a big general radiology meeting that's held every year at the same time. In fact, it's going on currently. It's always right after Thanksgiving in Chicago at McCormick Place. Huge, 50, 60,000 people there. And so I got invited to go. And so I'm like, okay, I'll go, even though I never go to this meeting. And I presented, my brief thing on treating cancer of the liver with embolization. And normally, when I give a brief talk like that, I'll give my talk and I'll leave. But we were invited to this meeting, and the auditorium where I was giving this talk, there was me and like five or six other people slated for that block of time. The auditorium probably fit 1,000, 1,500 people. There was probably 10 people in the audience. So as soon as I gave my talk, I felt bad. I walked off stage, I sat down in the audience, tried to listen to the other people because it was like so absurd. Like there was nobody could care less. Nobody could care about these talks because we weren't diagnostic radiologists, how to read an x-ray, how to, this was like treating patients. And so no one cared about that, but they stuck us in this huge auditorium. So one of the people after me gave the talk on the first 11 people that underwent UFE in the United States by this guy who was an interventional radiologist, chief of IR at UCLA, Scott Goodwin, who's a good friend of mine. And how UFE got discovered was, as I say, we've been embolizing cancerous tumors for quite a while. And when we do that, we embolize the tumor to make it an easier operation for the tumor to be removed. They go right from the embolization to surgery. Uh-huh. So somebody in France got the idea, well, why don't we embolize fibroids prior to hysterectomy to make it an easier hysterectomy? It made sense. No one had ever thought of doing benign tumors before, but they started doing that in France. Now in France, they have socialized medicine, rationed healthcare. You can't get something electively done same day, next day, like they do here.
Oh, wow.
So they would get their embolization for their fibroids. They would be discharged home, and they would wait 6 weeks, 7 weeks, 8 weeks for their elective hysterectomy. Oh. Well, what happened over that 6, 7, 8 weeks? Their symptoms went away. Mm. So these women were calling up their gynecologist saying, I feel great. My periods are normal. My pain's gone. Wow. Do I really need that second part? Do I really need the hysterectomy? Yeah. And the answer was no, you don't need the hysterectomy. All you needed was the uterine, the embolization, the UFE. So the gynecologist who was working with the interventional radiologist in France who was doing this called his buddy, who is the chief of OBGYN at UCLA, and said, you better get the IR on top of this and see this. This is pretty interesting stuff. And so Scott was presenting this first 11 patients done in the United States. And I'm sitting there in the audience going, whoa, this is really cool.
Wow.
I'm in Atlanta. I could help so many women.
Yeah.
This is why God put me here, because I never come to this meeting. I almost didn't even accept the invitation. We came and we were in this ridiculous auditorium with way too many seats empty. Normally I would have just left. I never would have heard Scott's speech.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just like, and I remember calling my wife saying, I know what I'm doing now. I know what I'm going to spend the rest of my life, my medical career doing.
Oh my goodness.
And so, as I say, things don't happen by accident. Say I met my wife that way, my career this way, things and lots of other things in my life where it was just seemed like a coincidence. There's no coincidence.
Okay.
God has a plan for all of us, and you just got to be, you know, receptive and listening and quiet. And that's why I say I spend, you know, a little time each day, like in prayer, just to kind of, no matter how crazy, hectic, and our days get really crazy and hectic, particularly this time of year, I take the time and I just kind of take a few minutes, you know, be grateful and appreciative and just kind of listen, just kind of get quiet and just kind of, you know, just listen.
Wow. Well, that is a wonderful way to kind of start your morning, where we always recommend with some meditation or prayer, some quiet time, some mindfulness, different things of that nature. So again, you have provided us with so much great and wonderful information about fibroids. And so now we know that there is a procedure out there. And those who are right here in the Atlanta area, you have Dr. Lipman, who is the best of the best. Please make sure you guys go and visit him and check him out on all social media platforms. Remember, he is on Instagram at dr_Lipman. That's Dr. dr_LIPMAN. We can also find him on his website at atlii.com. And if you want to see a full procedure done, please check him out on YouTube at the Atlanta Fibroid Center, where he is, shows so magnificently on his swag. I need to get me one of those.
And you got the color. That's our color for all of our materials, business cards, Radiant Orchid.
Okay, Radiant. Oh, Radiant. Now you're calling me Radiant.
Yeah, there you go.
You better stop with all the compliments, I tell you. Well, again, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
For coming. I can't wait to have you back again. And as I said, I would love to have your wife come in and join us as well.
She's very
integral. Tell us about all her, you know, philanthropy work and how it is being, you know, a part of your team.
Yeah, she's very integral in our team and helps out tremendously. She's really kind of the field person. She's not in the office at all. She's out in the field, whether it's helping in the education, in women's groups, the philanthropy, you say, it's a very important part of what we do. We are very focused and intentional. We know that we serve women, particularly women of color, and we are intentional in our philanthropy and our giving back. And so that's really important and integral in everything we do.
Shout your wife out and how she can be found.
She's really behind the scenes, so it's very difficult. In fact, if you can find a picture other than our wedding picture of her, that's a rarity, because she must be in the witness protection program or something, because it is very difficult to find a picture of her or to reach her. She's not on social media platforms per se.
Well, you know, if you go to any of your events,
you'll see her.
You will definitely meet her and see Miss Lipman there. Well, again, thank you so much, Dr. Lipman, for joining on us today on Dr. O After Dark. Make sure you too follow us, like, follow, and subscribe on all social media platforms at Dr. Olivia West. See you guys next time. Bye-bye.